Hi, I'm Rod.
And I'm Yasmina. Welcome to Life Trek.
Today we're talking about politics and racism.
Dun, dun, dun.
Really, though, about how to have uncomfortable conversations.
Yes, because we've both recently had some very uncomfortable conversations. You've had a lot of uncomfortable conversations, definitely in the last couple years. Since that whole election and all of that,
with people in our lives. Yeah.
And I feel like I'm always having uncomfortable conversations through work around equity. But, recently through Facebook, which is like the worst place to have an uncomfortable conversation, 'cause it's just going like,
it is a cesspool of bad conversations.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So, and I hardly ever get on Facebook, to have those conversations. Well, I'm always on Facebook, to have conversations on trying to prove my point. And so, gosh, where do I even start? So now I'm trying to think of like how to make sense of all this.
So, okay, let me back up and set the scene, because here in our little town.
Oh yeah, you're a good storyteller, yes.
We have, it's a pretty conservative, very white, very conservative town. And having grown up here for a good part of my growing up, I've watched it change. Slightly, it's certainly gotten bigger. It's the fastest growing town in the whole state. And I was here for part of my growing up in high school, and then I left and went all over the world and came back to it. And it was still very small and very conservative now, but now it's, or very conservative, but now it's getting much bigger. And there's starting to be some diversity here, but it's still pretty small.
Yeah.
And so then we went through the era of politics with President Trump, who is now no longer president. And yet we have a group of folks who have been at the entrance of our town every Sunday. They've been gathering with American flags, KKK flags,
huge
upside
rifles,
down flags,
just standing,
yeah,
which
toting
is really,
rifles. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in some cases, kind of mocking drivers as they go past and making a fairly large spectacle of themselves, looking for support. And I don't believe in their politics. So it's, for me personally, I find it kind of offensive. I wouldn't ever let somebody or say that somebody couldn't express themselves, but the manner in which people do matters.
Yeah. And I think that was what the whole argument was. It's like, well, they are expressing their right. You
right.
know, you can stand up there with a flag and support the person you are electing. But obviously elections are over at this point. And, you know, that's, I guess, was that whole argument like, well, they have their right to do so. And so you and I have talked like, you know, to what end, you know, to where do you say, well, you know, that is their right. And so there was, and multiple times actually, you've actually reached out and to the community or
to the town leadership,
to the town leadership,
and, stuff like that, yeah.
And I think they kind of gave you kind of the same response. And so there was a post, someone had asked like, what's the point? And there was many responses on there about,
this is a post on Facebook that you saw.
Yeah. And it was basically, well, you know, it's their, freedom of speech. Who are they hurting? Like,
yeah. So why does it bother you so much? Because
yeah.
they're just doing their own thing and they're not hurting anybody.
Exactly.
And your response to that was, well, actually, for anybody in this town who isn't conservative and white and all of that, it makes them a little scared, a little nervous, especially since they're doing this with KKK flags and guns and all of that right at the entrance of our town. For those people who see this, it is making them nervous. And just because and I'm doing your whole speech here, but
just no, because, which is great because you do say it so much better than me. I'm like, oh, wait a minute, what did I say?
Just because you, in your experience as a mainstream white person who, you know, might even hold some of these same values, don't feel threatened by it, doesn't mean that that's true for everybody in this
town.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So that's why I'm married to you, because exactly was my thought process. And, you know, that was the point I was trying to get across, was like, just because you might not feel threatened by seeing these people out there, there are other people that most certainly do. I mean, for someone to hold up a rifle out there, the Confederate flag, I mean, you're definitely sending a different message. So this Facebook post, I would say, was slowly starting to get out of control. And I just kept reiterating, like, I'm providing my perspective that you haven't heard so far. Mm-hmm. And people were still not, they just didn't want to hear it. And so I appreciated the person who moderates this post. She actually validated what I was trying to say. And she still came back with, like, this is maybe they find comfort with one another. And it was still, she was still trying to be...
play both sides.
Play both sides, exactly.
Yeah.
And so before I started to go really south really quickly, she actually asked, you know, she apologized that I felt that way, but it would be actually great to meet you and have a conversation with you over coffee. And so I was like, Oh, you know, likewise.
Because this Facebook group is a local Facebook group of moms here in our town. Mm-hmm. And so that's possible because of that. Yeah.
And so what was a conversation that was really going south really quickly, I really appreciated her, you know, really wrapping it up, hearing me out. And then we did, you know, we went out and met for coffee.
Earlier today.
And at a local coffee shop. And so we started talking about a little bit of our differences. And of course, you know, we were very different, you know, her being white and different religion, different background. But I also had shared with her, you know, again, you and I, you know, I was like, Well, you know, my husband actually is Christian, grew up here, you know, and was raised here. And I said, what I actually love about my husband is that he respects my culture. You know, we celebrate on Sunday, we're going to be celebrating Easter and a couple of weeks is Ramadan. Mm-hmm. we celebrate Hanukkah and Christmas.
Because I have a whole Jewish side to my family. Yeah.
And she thought that was really interesting. And I think, you know, yes, I could have gone in, you know, just, you know, being really defensive and wanting to, like, just shove this information down her throat and be like, this is how it is. But I ended up looking to see if, like, because so I also do a local coalition here on breastfeeding and also exchanging contact information to maybe, you know, provide some of our business to our coalition. So not only am I trying to even support a local business here, but also provide that perspective.
Because she runs a business that would do some business with your breastfeeding coalition.
Exactly, yeah. And it was just such a great opportunity to share my perspective. And we talked, we talked for like almost 2 hours. Mm. But it was very refreshing and I wasn't nervous at all. And I kept thinking, you know, I too have to be better at having these uncomfortable conversations, because I know a few years back, and even sometimes now, that when people will say things like, you know, Black Lives Matter, be like, no, all lives matter. And it'll just trigger something in me. And like, I will immediately go from like 0 to 60. And I can't have a conversation with them. Like, I cannot believe you even have those beliefs. And so I shifted that a little bit over the last couple of years and thinking, this is an opportunity for me to hear their side. And generally listen, you know, listen to and find out where, you know, how they were raised. And I understand that the beliefs that you have is part of what you're growing, you know, part of your growing up. And so we can come to some, and I don't know if her and I ever came to some common ground, but what we got out of it was a new friendship, a new business possibility, but also having the opportunity to you know, for her to even hear what...
Even just to be exposed to somebody to that, who thinks different. Yeah.
I mean, we talked about immigration, border. We talked about LGBTQ community. Mm. And I think that if you have so many barriers up, you miss those opportunities on hearing this person's story that and those challenges and hardships.
And so, and the understanding, too, that you can have your beliefs and the way that you know approach the world, but being open to allowing others to have theirs, and that doesn't necessarily threaten yours. With her or with anybody, I think a lot of the way that people approach these difficult conversations or conversations that would seem to challenge their belief system or the way they look at life is that they go at it very defensively, because now your viewpoint is challenging my viewpoint. Am I going to have to change my viewpoint? Are you telling me that I'm wrong? That I'm going to have to look at the world differently suddenly? Not necessarily. Maybe that is the case, but that'll be up to you to decide. Mm-hmm. But nobody is going to be able to be successful in a conversation like that if you can't get past the defensive piece of it and have a conversation where you're really listening to the other side and really just trying to understand a perspective.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you have to change anybody or vice versa.
Mm-hmm. And kind of see where they're coming from. And I agree, because I feel like before there were certain words I'd hear, you know, and then I'm like, I can't have a conversation. I can't even be friends with that person. And I think more so in the last, you know, this last couple of years that we've, if you voted a certain way, I was like, nope, can't do. I can't, I can't have a conversation with you. And I would group you in one category.
Right.
But I'm learning that I want to hear more of what your thoughts and your viewpoint. And I'm hoping that for me to share my story or my experiences, you know, when we talked about immigration, I said, yeah, I was illegal. And we talked about just the misconceptions. And I said, you know, their response was, you know, it's just hard to know what's true and what's not true. And I said, then ask an immigrant.
Yeah.
Ask those people who have those life experiences. What is it like for them? That's where you're going to get your true story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I did say, start to take a look at your friends around you.
Wait, are you one of those nasty people? Yeah, the rapers, murderers, killers.
Oh, categorizing?
Immigrants.
Yeah. Exactly. But I think that even for myself, and we talked a little bit about that, is look about your circle of friends and how diverse is it with religion and race and ethnicity and even, you know, sexual orientation. And if it's not, you know, start making an intentional interaction with these folks, or volunteering, or kind of getting in close proximity with different groups that you want to learn more about, because that's where you're going to learn. You're not going to get, well, I mean, on the news and things like that, but that's where you're going to get really have a good perspective on people's just life experiences.
Yeah. And the second tagline to our little title is being comfortable with being uncomfortable conversations. And it's a skill set, but it's like a muscle. It's something that you have to go work at to become stronger in, whether it's with, like you did, which kudos to you, to go have a conversation with somebody like that that you didn't know about a topic that is controversial, but you sat down with them and you had a nice conversation and it didn't get ugly.
Mm-hmm.
But those kind of conversations we're having all the time with, to a lesser or greater degree, with family members, with other people at work or in our community, or, you know, people that we know. Like I had a really kind of a long conversation with my own brother, who we're at different ends of the political spectrum with regards to, you know, who we voted for and how we look at the world and all of that. Nevertheless, he's my brother. And I love him, and I choose to love him. You know, we're very different people, but he's my brother. And so when we talk about things like this, I want to understand, like, why do you think the way you think? What mm-hmm. what is it that's motivating you to think the way you think? And he, so I'm asking direct questions, and some of them are pretty direct questions, you know, like, haven't you considered this, you know? But he's doing the same thing to a degree, and challenging my assumptions on things, which is okay. Neither of us are threatened by each other. We learn a little bit about why we think the things that we do, and the things that we disagree on that we know that we're not going to come to an agreement on exactly. And there's some that we do, but the things that we don't, I just choose to keep loving them anyway, and vice versa. That's not going to affect that. And I had a great afternoon with him. We went fishing the other day. However, I know for him, he feels very, threatens the wrong word, but just put off by the fact that my parents, actually both sets of my parents, because my parents were divorced, both sets of my parents are probably more, well, they're very much more in line with the way that I look at things, look at the world, politically at least. And he says every time I talk to them, it's like, how could you believe this? How could you vote for this? You know, blah, blah, blah. And they really kind of shove it down his throat. Mm-hmm. To the point that he really doesn't want to have that conversation.
Because each of them are like, this is my truth right here. This is my beliefs. I'm not.
Well, you know. And your viewpoint is stupid, right? You know, clearly you're not thinking, you're not educated, you're stupid, you don't know, you know. And that just, that doesn't win anybody over.
Yeah.
If that's your motivation. But two, it doesn't show compassion, love, you know, acceptance of a human being who has a lot of different reasons for believing what they believe. Either they've grown up around it, or all their friends are that, or there's a lot of reasons that people believe what they believe.
And a lot of times their values, you know, what they believe in are actually very similar. And because we do know some folks who have different political viewpoint, and they're great people, you know. Yeah. They're very caring, loving, and they give back to the community.
For sure. Like that conversation we had about, for those who don't know here, but I was formerly in the military, and I know a lot of my former soldiers who live in this area that were, when I was a company commander and they were my soldiers and all of that. It's funny that I still use that verbiage, but I was friends with them, a couple of them on Facebook, and that's a pretty conservative community too. And I have lots of respect for them as individuals. And I think vice versa. But with one of them, at least, every time I would post something that was questioning or, you know, things going on in politics or whatever, he'd come on and counter it with whatever. And I always reiterated that I cared about him as an individual. I might not agree with his politics. And then I would try to challenge his viewpoint a little bit, you know, not in an aggressive way, but in a way to say, well, you know, have you thought about this? And I could never get past with him. I could never get past the point of just the pithy things that, you know, are on Facebook or that are on news channels that are meant to be inflammatory. To the point that I realized, you know, I'm trying to have a conversation here, but there comes a point where I just probably can't continue this kind of conversation.
Yeah, because they're being fed by certain...
Well, yeah, and like you did the other day, or earlier today, excuse me, where you were having a conversation, being open to all possibilities so that you could hear the other side. And you were also sharing, too, but you weren't shutting her down. You were listening. And what I wasn't getting is I wasn't getting the listening from the mm-hmm. other side of the conversation. And while I was trying to listen and trying to understand where they were coming from, what I was getting back was memes and pithy regurgitations of stuff that he'd gotten at other places. And it got to the point where an actual conversation of really listening to each other was difficult.
Yeah, and I think
I had to move on.
those types of scenarios, I think it's because it has to be both sides.
Yeah.
And I know in person should say was the same, like it would just not go anywhere because they were refusing to hear any other sides. Now I've had conversations, especially around immigration, not that I'm a professional at it, or I always joke that I'm not an immigration lawyer or anything like that, but just being an immigrant myself, helping out my parents and having friends who had also immigrated from Morocco, their experiences that I know about are completely what other people tell me of the immigration law and how things work. It's completely false.
Yeah.
And I would tell them, actually, no, that is not the case. And the reason I know that is because I personally have tried to do that, or I personally know someone who has, done X, Y, and Z. So there's a lot of misconceptions. And I do enjoy having those moments to not necessarily shut it down, but there's a lot of these false narrative and that people have categorized folks in, so if you are Hispanic and making an assumption that the government provides you all these foods and then
Right.
again all the news outlets they were talking about the caravans and there are drug users and rapists and all that, criminals, and suddenly that's what, if you are from any Hispanic country, that's what you represent. And so it gave me an opportunity to talk today and say, yep, I was on all these, services. And I had said to her was that people would tell me that, well, no, it's because you worked hard. And I would say, yes, for sure I did. But I would not have gotten where I was if it wasn't for some of those resources and services. If I did not get food from the government, my kids and I won't say we'd have starved, but it would definitely have made it so much more challenging.
Yeah.
If didn't get free childcare or free health care.
Well, and you're a great poster child for all of that because when you needed it, at the time that you needed it, and without going into, why you got into the situation that you were in, but clearly you needed that at that time and you used those services. But meanwhile, you were also renting out rooms in your house. You were putting yourself through college. You were becoming a citizen. You were doing all of the things that those programs are there for, to help people who are trying to make a better life here, trying to become citizens, trying to become members of society. And now,
But if I looked differently, I talked about too about being white passing. Now, if I wore hijab, completely different category as well, because we have all these assumptions that, there's immigrants coming and taking our resources
yeah, the way that people would have perceived
for
you.
exactly,
But
yeah.
I mean more like the way that those services were intended to
For
work,
sure, yeah.
that it did exactly what it was supposed to
It
do.
yeah, and I was making the point of where that racism comes in is
Yeah.
that people have this assumption that, open borders, immigrants are coming here and they're just one taking all of our jobs and getting handouts from the government, not even understanding even how these handouts, so to speak, work. I don't know, quote unquote, so people can see me.
Yeah, air quotes.
Air quotes, how those handouts can work. And so I think that's where you're starting to get into this just this dangerous stereotype or narrative of what, especially during a couple of years ago, again, I don't want to get too much into politics. And one of the comments that I had made in one of those face that Facebook post is that, I said that, and again, I thought we were going to talk politics, but I was like, Trump provided a platform, or and he also there was this giving people an opportunity or to show their true racist self. And because, and that's where even right now, you see an increase of hate crime.
Yeah, especially against Asian Americans and whatnot right
Yeah,
now. Yeah.
and racism has always been there. It definitely has increased, and now that we can track as far as data and all of that. But that's something to where, again, where I felt like I had to intervene, and I had talked about where if I'm not, I feel like it's my duty, and I'm teaching my kids to do that as well. if you see something that is that's racist or having to do with a hate crime, you say something, obviously, mm-hmm. and if it's in a safe situation. So if it's on Facebook, if someone makes a comment during a meeting, or if someone makes a side comment, you know, even to myself, then I do feel it's my obligation to speak up and say something, because that's an opportunity. And so how you do it, of course, I think it takes a lot of practice. And, you know, especially there's many opportunities where I didn't say anything because mm-hmm. I wasn't sure how to approach it. And not that I'm like an expert at it, but I felt like this conversation today was like, oh, you know, I can have a conversation with someone who has a completely different right. upbringing or political viewpoint than I do. I get off my soapbox.
Actually, let's take a break here real quick so we can allow a word from sponsors, and then we'll be right back. And we're back. So maybe as we start finishing this podcast off, one of the things that you and I have, and kind of the reason that we started this podcast, is because we were having conversations, right? Sitting yeah. in our living room, enjoying our coffee on a Sunday morning or whatever, or Saturday night morning, and having, in some cases, some difficult conversations. Not that we were upset at each other, but if I'm being completely honest, having conversations about racism and white fragility and, you know, all these other buzzwords yeah, that are going around that were a little uncomfortable, but I'm open to being educated about the terms and understanding where I have blind spots myself. And you were working in this space, so it's applicable.
Yeah, and it was practice for me too, because the comments or the responses you were giving me were very similar to what I was getting to either at work or someone else who mm-hmm. was also white. And so it was helpful to practice with you. And even like I came home today, and I think this is where I need to still learn a little bit more. And so the person had said that they felt that they were being accused, or that it was not a bad thing, but they were being accused for being white, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I still need to learn why it's uncomfortable for white people to have conversations about race. And I've heard this many, many times, that it's uncomfortable, I just don't know. And then for me, I'm like, oh, I've had conversations about race even indirectly from a young age, you know. Moroccan.
So what does that look like from your perspective? What is that kind of conversation?
So
look like?
Good ones and not so good ones, where definitely we're Muslim, we're Moroccan, Berber, you know, North African, this is your identity. Mm-hmm. You marry within your race, you marry within your family.
This is back in Morocco.
Yeah, back in Morocco. But even here, I mean, if you talk to other immigrants, it seems pretty consistent to a lot of the, you know, different mm-hmm. countries. It doesn't have to be Moroccan, doesn't have to be Muslim per se, but it's very much, you know, your identity. We're not white. We're not Westerners. That's what the Westerners do. So again, I keep moving my hand because it's very much separated.
Yeah.
And I think too, the conversation, even in our own community and our own faith, has to be had as well, because there is then this misconception that you're growing up to where, oh, no, we're Moroccan. We're not white. We're not American.
For that matter, you're not black, even though you live in
North
Africa. No, we don't. You know.
Yeah, we're not black, exactly, because we're lighter skin, and they have their own racism, colorism, you know, within their own community.
As do all communities, like in the Asian world. There's a fairly famous comedian who has a whole thing about, you know, the ranking of different Asians, and they themselves ranking themselves about, you know, where if you're Chinese or you're Japanese or you're Taiwanese, where you are in the pecking order of race and all of that. I mean, this is true of every culture everywhere.
Yeah. So there's all those misconceptions growing up that we had. And then not to mention, you know, again, I know I talk about that all the time of, and for females in the world of beauty, you know, white was always much more preferred. So lighter skin, lighter hair, straighter hair. So I used to iron my hair flat, dye it blonde, yeah. You know, to look a certain way. So yeah, that was definitely talked about. I mean, even when I met you, well, when I was with my ex too, was very hesitant on marrying someone who was non-Muslim, who was white. And then even when I met you, very hesitant to share that with my parents, because I knew they're very accepting now, but knew their viewpoint.
Yeah, you were worried that it would be not accepted. That would be a very uncomfortable meeting and conversations and all those other kinds of things.
Yeah, so at a young age, race was always part of that, you know.
Would you say, though, that it is easier... So part of what we had said before we started this particular conversation is that we were going to try to not be so scripted and allow for a little bit more difficult conversations. So
are you asking me an uncomfortable question?
But not necessarily for you, but I realize it's an uncomfortable question. But would you say that being Moroccan, that it was easier to come home with a white husband versus, say, a black husband?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely more accepting if you were to, like, to, on the scale.
Yeah.
Than being with someone who was white.
Non-Muslim.
And non-Muslim. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's where they have a long ways to go, even within, again, different colors and the different religions, for sure. Mm. Yep. Absolutely. And I definitely interrupt and make sure that I'm, you know, I interrupt racism when I see it. Yeah. And I call it out, and I would hear conversations like here in the Western world, like, oh yeah, my parents or my grandparents, you know, they're older generation. That's not an excuse. My parents are older, different country.
Although they've had more exposure to the Western world. They lived in Canada for a while. They lived in Bermuda for years.
Yeah. But so you would think they would be more open-minded and less racist. But they still are. But the way I do it, obviously, I don't, when I say shut it down, I don't be like, you know, that's, you know, and I actually do say, well, actually, that's racist. You cannot say that.
Yeah.
And then I tell them why. And I try to provide some insight or perspective that they understand. And especially since a lot of times they're more attached to religion. So I talk about, you know, how God has created us equal and kind of bring it back and talk about, you know. And I think that again, that's you. I do feel like people then have an obligation interrupting racism at whatever level, whether it's at work. And I think, and if you can't find the words to do so, then I think that's okay. And take a time to just maybe think about what could I have said? Because I know that I've been in those instances. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't say anything because I was so taken back by what was said and I didn't even know where to start. But the fact that you have this, whether it's guilt or like next time I'm going to say, you know, this, this, and this, that I think that's progress. And then it takes practice. But
for sure. Yeah.
I do know that you have to, and everyone should, you know, whether it's, and I'm trying to teach my kids to do the same thing. And I know one of our children, as I've called them, social justice warrior, they have gotten better at doing it. And I think that's where you're going to start seeing progress. But if you tend to be quiet, so like I was telling you just before we got on, I went back and checked out that post.
The one I sent you?
No, on Facebook.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's seen by 129 people. And scrolling through, not that I know all these people in my kind of small community here, but I found it astounding that out of all those people who saw it, they pretty much were nine different comments. I mean, there was like 35 comments total.
But nine people who made comments.
Yeah. And I was a little saddened to see that because there was not one person. I take that back. One person did put a little heart.
Standing up for what you were saying.
Yeah, a little heart, another person put a laughing face, which like, whatever. Yeah. Okay, you just. Yeah. But it just shows you how people really steered clear of that conversation. Yeah. They probably read all the comments and were like, yep, not even going to touch this. Mm-hmm. How do you then step in and, you know, how do you respond and try to interrupt racism at whatever level, you know, and what, and I appreciated that person that who put a little heart next to it. I'm like, okay, thank God. I have someone who is supportive.
At least open.
At least open you know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's definitely important to stand up for people in our community around us who are disenfranchised from in a lot of different ways or different or whatever, because they're still human beings and they're still part of our families, our workplace, our, you know, community. And it's the right thing to do to step in and protect people and have some awareness that people might be uncomfortable, even scared, like from those people on the bridge that are toting their guns and they have their KKK flags and all those other kinds of things. I mean, that can be scary for people. And maybe it's not scary for you because clearly that's not targeting you.
Yeah, or the people that you look at that place is that they look like you and they have similar beliefs and, you know, you're like, oh yeah. And actually one person even did say that, like, oh no, I went to talk to them and, you know, they're just very nice people. So for to kind of put it back on you, come to a conversation, question.
Yeah.
What about your parents? Because, well, they're divorced. I mean, was it them knowing? I'm sure you didn't really introduce, like, this is my Muslim.
So it's funny. The only argument that I have ever had with my father a long time ago, before I was married the first time, was what kind of girl am I interested in? Because I was single, obviously, at the time. And I said, well, you know, I think probably because it's easier and all that, you know, I'd like them to be a Christian. Well, what if they're not a Christian, he says. And I was like, well, you know, I had this whole litany of things in my head that you kind of do about what sort of girl you're interested in as a guy, you know, dark hair, you know, all the looks that, you know, I like brunettes, blah, blah, blah. Nope.
I'm blonde.
No, you are just not. Moroccan blonde. But I never got to that because he was like, well, what if they're Hindu? Or what if they're, you know, and he was going through a list of things. And I was like, well, I probably wouldn't start a relationship with somebody who was, just because I had this criteria in my head. And unfortunately, my dad was completely right in the end, which tells me, though, that surprisingly, I don't know why it's surprising, but my dad's, he doesn't share a lot of emotional stuff, but he was open to that. And he still is. He was very accepting of you when he met you. And my mother has been too, and stepfather. And there's nobody in my family, even though I'm come from a white family, obviously, there's nobody in my family that was not accepting of you and your viewpoints and your religion and everything else. Even the whole Jewish side of my family, which I didn't get to know until much later in life, they were very accepting of me knowing that I was a Christian, and they had no problem with you knowing you were a Muslim. So I'm fortunate in that. Mm-hmm. It's been not even something I've thought about twice because it's been so easy.
Yeah. And maybe that's part of, too, of why it has been so easy, because you grew up, you know, I mean, even though I grew up different, I still had access to, like, the Western culture and going to an American school, and I went to like was an international school, so I had exposure to so many people from around the world
and different ways of thinking.
Yeah, and then so even though I grew up in Morocco,
yeah,
and typically, I mean, it depends on where you are.
The ghetto.
Well, I went to school in like a nice town,
right?
And then, yeah, where I live was just like just really Morocco, you know, like it's a non-touristy area.
Yeah.
So when you went, yeah, you were definitely the only white person outsider that was there, and that you kind of stood out. And so that's kind of why. But if I had taken you to other touristy areas like Tangier, you know, you would have. There's lots of foreigners who live there.
Yeah, well, and when I say, I joke, but because Martil is now a big city, it's really nice. When you grew up there, there were dirt roads everywhere.
Oh, yeah, I mean.
It was kind of a ghetto.
Yeah.
Now it's not that. Now it's something completely different.
But then it did allow me, again, to see, you know, where people, how they lived. And I think that that's why I'm so passionate about it, because I have many perspectives and have experienced. Because like during the week, I went to this private rich school with, you know, kids from all around the world, having chauffeurs drive them to school.
Right.
Meanwhile, on the weekends that I would go to Martil and then Catalan, and I would go to my cousin's house who did not have any running water. And it was common. Well, not common, but that's what they did, is just go and get water from the well.
Yep.
And if I spend the night, we'd brush our teeth by the water, you know, by the well, cold water. Toilet was outside, hole in the ground. And so I was experiencing that. And I think that is what had given me just, you know, an open mind on how people live and the challenges that they experience.
Yeah.
So I do feel then it's my obligation to be that voice at the table wherever I'm at, because I'm like, I feel like I'm representing them. And when I, you know, hear, yeah, definitely. I think immigration for sure. I think I'm still getting. Although today I did pretty well, because they had asked me, you know, what do I think about immigration? I'm like, let me tell you, do you have a couple hours to spare?
Yeah.
But it is, because it hits home for me.
Right.
But what I do want to have more conversations is that why is it uncomfortable for white people to talk about race, and what is that? What is it that makes them uncomfortable? And I think that's something that I still need to learn a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And maybe that is for me to ask people.
Yeah, just have that. Well, and so that segues into, I think, probably what we should close with, which is, not, and we haven't scripted this out at all, but but is
how
to
we roll.
Talk about the ways or the tools or the things that you do when having a difficult conversation in order for it to be more successful.
Mm-hmm.
A, like I'll lead off, is not losing your temper, right? Staying in control, being willing to hear things that are gonna make you uncomfortable and not emotionally react to it in such a way that you end up losing your temper, especially when, and I really, really hate the way that people have overused the word triggered,
mm-hmm.
As if it's a bad thing. Well, it is kind of a bad thing to be triggered and all that, but as if it's a weak, democratic, left-leaning, whatever thing to get triggered by something. Everybody has their triggers. Everybody has their triggers. Both sides of the political spectrum, it doesn't matter. We all have our triggers. But the point being is not letting yourself be controlled by that trigger. Seeing it, understanding, oh, yeah, that I feel that, right? And not emotionally surrendering to that, and where you're not able to have a conversation and not able to hear the other side. So that would be one thing as far as having a conversation with somebody is stay emotionally in check. Don't get angry, right? What other things, while you were talking,
I think just generally wanting to hear more of their thought process. Mm. You know, like for me, I actually was watching other news outlets to hear what other people were hearing, just so I can understand what made the person believe
what they believe.
And yeah. I think, and I, again, I'm getting better at that, and just wanting to generally understand what are. You know, what are you concerned about, and what about it does this make you just uncomfortable, or, and I think that's what I, that's the next step where I want to hear is when someone says, you know, this makes me uncomfortable, is, you know, well, what about it? Does it make you uncomfortable? But being genuinely open to hearing more.
Keeping and
not,
open mind.
Not exactly non-threatening, because, you know, I think people do come in with good intentions, and I think more often than not, I do meet just really good people. And just because they have a different viewpoint, you know, than me, how can I just connect with them a little bit more?
That's probably just point three too, right? So not getting angry, keeping an open mind, and genuinely caring about the individual, about human beings, you know, about the person that you're talking to. Because if you care about them, then you're going to not get as triggered. You're going to realize that, you know, there's differences that they just don't know, or they haven't experienced. So then one of the things you said about the lady you talked to today was, she's really young, and she hasn't, I don't think, hasn't traveled, hasn't really experienced much of the world yet. And so it's understandable that her viewpoints would not be quite as broad. Where you and I have traveled the world, we've been in lots of different environments. So understandably, our perspective is a little bit bigger. And
we've had opportunities to have conversations like this, you and I, to where I think you do have to get better at even hearing your own voice talk about some issues, and even hearing your own thoughts, because a lot of times you might have, you think that you, you know, you, this is how you believe, but then the more you talk about it, realizing actually, you know, and I've been able to open with you, just because, again, I feel safe and not judged. And but a lot of times people don't want, their fear of being judged based on their political viewpoint, that they're just not willing to share on both sides.
And actually, for me personally, that's one of the things that helps me have those difficult conversations with you, especially when it's something that is challenging to me, where I can feel myself emotionally react to something. But I know underneath of that, like, this person loves me. This person cares about me. Like, she's not out to get me. And that lets me, inside, that lets me relax a little bit and sort of settle in for, okay, I'm going to have this conversation and it's going to be okay, even if it's kind of uncomfortable right now. And with the person you were talking to today too, because you are very, you're a very warm and very genuine person. You get passionate about stuff. I know you can get your ire up about stuff, but I could see why she would not feel threatened by you.
Yeah, I don't look threatening at all.
Well,
and
your
approach
wasn't threatening.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I was going in it where I did want to learn more, you know, and have a conversation. So yeah, I don't, and I rarely come in. I don't think I've ever come in to where I just, there have been instances where I didn't respond because my head was going to just explode.
Yeah.
And in those cases, again, just sometimes it's, there are some people that it's just kind of pointless to have this conversation because they have just.
Yeah, you're going to be triggered. They're not going to listen.
Yeah.
There's, you know, it's difficult to have a conversation. But I think that when you do have those conversations and the people are willing to engage at some level, that approaching it the way you approached it, or approaching the way you approached it with me. Is super helpful.
And then using different terminology, like when you're saying, you know, the word, you know, you get triggered and stuff. And I know that privilege gets overused, and now white privilege gets overused as well, to the point to where. And so using different language to try to get your point across has challenged me too. And thinking, okay, well, let's, next time, this is how I'm going to phrase it. And I know I talked to you too, is like how I'll phrase it using, because I think sometimes with race, people are able to see different perspectives when it involves gender. So for example, I talk to I was trying to establish some type of common ground. So there's your other 4 point is like a step, because you do have a lot of similarities. And being a female, so we can talk about some of the challenges that her and I, as a female, every female is going to experience this. Like, we don't go jogging in the middle of the night and go taking walks. There's just some. And so understanding, here are some of the similarities that we have. And so using.
And as far as some of the other common ground things that you established with her, probably beyond that was also you're both moms, and I think you talked a little bit about that. You live in the same community, you're all part of the same thing, you're part of the same Facebook group. I mean, there's a lot of
Yeah, there was a
commonalities.
lot, yeah, exactly, commonalities. And so just using a different approach that you were trying to, your end goal is going to, you really fixated on what you're trying to accomplish. But in order for people to have this paradigm shift, it has to relate to them, and if you can't put yourself in other person's shoes, and sometimes, we live in a really fortunate community and we talked about privilege, and that's the part that they could get. They just couldn't get the white privilege part of it. And so that's where I brought in as, gender. I talked about, my husband being male, and there's some privileges as a male, and we talked about like male dominating workplaces and all of that. So she was able to relate to that. And so using that, saying, okay, that same concept, now think of it as, in a race situation and how uncomfortable it can be, or the certain culture. So I think using different approaches to get to where you want to be, I think can be helpful. And
And that actually, there's a probably a last thing I'll do for steps to help you in an argument, or not argument, in a conversation like that, is baby steps. Like, don't expect somebody is going to immediately like be completely won over to your side, or something like that. But for the conversation you had today, you put your foot
Plant a
in the
little
door,
seeds, yeah.
you planted a seed, you opened it at a crack, whatever it is, you just a little bit. And personally, with me, when we had a conversation a while back about white fragility, and I'm like, some of the ways that the terms were coming across to me, yeah, it was rubbing me the wrong way. I don't have so much of a problem with that now.
That's what's your white fragility showing. I'm just kidding. You're triggered.
But yeah, for sure. I mean, and I don't so much have a problem with the terms and all of that now, but I needed to take that one little baby step at a time before I could sort of ingest that. And you can't force feed somebody a whole meal in a couple of bitefuls. It's going to take a little bit to get there, and you need to allow space for that, allow time for that, so that that can be slowly ingested and made so that they can make it theirs. Because right now it's you and your thing that you're trying to shove on me otherwise. But if it trickles in and I'm slowly being exposed to it, then I can probably ingest it. But I have to be
But
allowed
we're
to
such an
do that
immediate
slowly.
culture too, and we're just like, nope, this is, and you're right, and I think that's probably a good part of my, I would say this should be like your number one, should be baby steps. Before you do anything, remember this is, it takes a long time. And I think that was really, it's going to be really helpful in a conversation, because you're right. You want it, when you end the conversation, you want it to be like, I got my point across, and now they are a convert. They
Now
converted.
they see
They're
my side, I've won
signed.
them over.
Exactly.
And that's just not reality. Okay, well, we covered a lot of ground here today. And actually, I really liked this the way that this conversation went, as far as what I don't want this to be is overly scripted or anything else. And I really like these more real conversations, and that's what got us into this in the first place. So this has been fun, so thanks. All right, so with that, I would say, looks like we're out of time. And
So thank you all for joining us, and we hope you got something out of this talk.
yeah, something that you can add to your life trek.